All rise. The Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. We are here for oral argument in our case number CB250087, Veets v. Chandler. These proceedings are being audio and video recorded and live streamed. And so, counsel, we ask you to please identify yourself and your client at the beginning of your argument. Each side has up to 20 minutes. You're not obligated to take the entire time, but certainly it's there for you if you'd like it. Appellant's counsel is responsible to watch the clock if you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal. Also, please keep in mind that we've read the briefs, we've conferenced the case this morning, and with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Steve Serbalek. I represent Commander Scott Veach. I intend on reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal. Imagine I'm an employer and I want to hire an employee. I tell the employee that the employee will only receive the minimum wage enacted by Arizona right now, notwithstanding any future minimum wage changes. They get the minimum wage that exists in the current law. I also tell the employee that they are only subject to the Arizona Civil Rights Act as it exists right now, notwithstanding any other changes to ARS 41-1461 in the future. That employee will only be subject to the current civil rights law. I also tell them that their workplace protections for health and safety will only be protected by ADOSH standards as they exist right now. If Arizona enacts different standards, they can't benefit from those new standards. Let's say I want to limit sick leave. I tell the employee they're only entitled to the protections that exist right now for using leave. Even if the voters change the Fair Wages and Healthy Families Act, Prop 206, those changes won't apply to that employee because I want to make my employees exempt from future legislative changes. I submit to the Court that this would not stand, nor should it. This is because the legislature has the ability to enact standards for employment. The ability to enact standards going forward is well supported by case law, both here and as far as the U.S. Supreme Court. So I submit the pertinent inquiry as to when standards apply is when they vest. And no court has ever held that an at-will employment term is a vested right. How could they? Because an at-will employment term is always subject to legislative enactments. It's contingent on the state of the law. On the other hand, numerous cases look at when a triggering event occurs to determine what legislation applies. In Landgraf, the U.S. Supreme Court looked to the Civil Rights Act as it existed when the employee filed a lawsuit. In Vandekroll, the Arizona Supreme Court looked to when the employee filed a claim for workers' compensation benefits. This is when the retroactive analysis exists. If a case looks back to commenced administrative or legal proceedings that was initiated prior to legislative change, to a lawsuit or an administrative action that took place before the law took effect. But that's not what we have here. The Superior Court missed this analysis completely, so I want to make sure to highlight the pertinent aspects of the law so the Court understands what the POBR triggering events are. They're investigations of serious misconduct that could lead to suspension, demotion, or termination, ARS 38-1104, and appeals of suspensions, demotions, or terminations contained in ARS 38-1106. And of course, we're seeking a review under ARS 38-1107, which exists when a non-probationary officer is terminated and there's no appeal mechanism offered by the employer. Here, it's undisputed that Commander Veach was terminated after the effective date of the legislative change to the POBR, and that he sought review under ARS 38-1107 of the POBR. So the question is, what did the POBR require at the time of the termination? And the POBR makes it clear that the legislature wanted to enact minimum standards for law enforcement in Arizona.
I mean, I think your hypotheticals at the beginning were interesting, but in this agreement doesn't mention the POBR, right? This agreement being the at-will employment status document that...
Correct.
Doesn't that make this different?
No,
I mean,
because...
If it had said you get everything in the POBR and the POBR changes, then maybe you get the benefit of those changes. But this document doesn't say that.
Well, no, nor should it, because what you wouldn't be, you wouldn't make an agreement to say, well, when I'm signing something and I'm at will, I necessarily need to opt into minimum wage, or I need to opt into civil rights statutes.
I think you would just say you get the minimum wage, and then when the minimum wage changes, by necessity, so does the rate of pay.
Right. And in 2020, it was absolutely permissible, up until the legislature at its pleasure decided to create minimum standards, it was absolutely permissible in 2020 to opt out of the POBR. Now, clearly in 2022, when you say we want to establish minimum standards, there is no more opt-out. Those opt-out mechanisms that had existed previously are extinguished. And that's why the POBR talks about we're not extinguishing every agreement because those that actually supplement or enhance the POBR are not preempted. But preemption necessarily looks back to say, are the agreements consistent with the minimum standards that the legislature intended?
But the effect of doing that is taking at-will employment and turning it into something else, right?
Well, I think all at-will employment is actually subject to legislative enactment of the state. And that's where the minimum wage examples is super clear. Civil rights statutes are super clear. And you wouldn't be able to say, hey, you signed an at-will agreement, so now that Arizona has says you can't discriminate against people over the age of 40, well, I still want to fire you because you signed that previously. So essentially, you're immune to any type of other protections that exist in the statute. That's not the state of the law, and it hasn't been. And there was a problem that was pretty evident in the POBR of we tried to establish a peace officer's Bill of Rights, but now we're realizing that that minimum standard is not being enforced around the state. So from September of 2022 going forward, if you're going to do something that would involve a termination of a non-probationary employee, you have to now follow the same legislative requirement that exists for everyone else around the state.
So you're saying that the 2022 amendment operates retroactively?
No, it doesn't operate retroactively, because just like the other examples that exist where you have an event after the enactment of the law, it actually impacts the events that happen after the enactment of the law. So a retroactive application would be if they said, we want to impact any investigations going back to 2020. If you were terminated, if you had an investigation prior to 2020, if the legislature wanted to make it retroactive, they would say, hey, we're going to go back to 2020 for cases that already exist. What it's saying is you might have an agreement, just like you might have had an agreement for wage, but going forward from when we changed the minimum wage on, going forward from this day on, that part of your agreement is no longer consistent with the law. And we're going to say if you terminate someone going forward, or if you put them under investigation going forward from that date forward, then you have to follow the minimum standards.
Part of what you said, where you said that part of the agreement is no longer operative, sounds like the retroactive application of this law, because you're saying in 2022 the legislature decided you can no longer have the at-will term that was in the prior contract. How is that not retroactive operation?
Well, even first off, I don't believe it's retroactive application, because you have to look at what the triggering event is. So just because there's essentially facts that happen in the past doesn't create a triggering event. So you have in Landgraf, the triggering event was filing the EEO claim. So case law is very clear in Arizona and in federal courts that the triggering event is filing a lawsuit. In Kroll, it was filing a workers' compensation claim. And you look at what is the law at the time that you file the claim. And I think Kroll was very clear on that, that just because the law changed what defenses or burdens would have existed from a factual standpoint, had Kroll filed his workers' compensation claim after the legislative enactment, it's not a retroactive impact. It's saying when you file your claim, when you have the triggering event, what law do we look at that point in time?
I guess if I could just try one more.
Just in follow-up on that, the difficulty I'm having with your position is that, you know, you're making it be about the operative facts of what people do to litigate with respect to the agreement, but the legislature itself speaks to whether it chooses to preempt or not agreements, and it seems to me the relevant question is when the rights vest in the contract, when the agreement is made. The legislature is talking about an agreement that is already static. It's already made.
Well, I want to be really clear on this, because I think this is what the Superior Court missed. If you read only 381102, mm-hmm. that only talks about agreements. The thing is, 381102 is talking about the impact on the entire article. So you're saying what happens for an investigation that happens going forward? Mm-hmm. What happens for a disciplinary appeal going forward? And is there Superior Court review going forward? So when you say that the statute only talks about agreements, yes, technically that's correct for just 381102, mm-hmm. But the operation of 381102 clearly relates to the rest of the article by its own terms. So 381102 is saying, what are the minimum standards that we want for police officers in Arizona? We're essentially trying to create that minimum standard. And if you don't do that, it has kind of an absurd effect. So now if I have someone that I appoint as a police officer right now, and I say, you're only entitled to the provisions of the POBR as they exist in 2025. Well, the legislature just changed the POBR. It's going to go in effect in a couple of weeks. Are now the new version of the POBR, is that frozen in time, and that doesn't impact these current employees because you can somehow opt out as an employer? That's not the law. And this is where, even if you have...
If they don't want that to happen, they can include an express provision saying this is retroactive.
Or they can say we're going to set the minimum standards, but we're not preempting agreements that supplement or enhance, which is exactly the text of 381102, to say we want to set the minimum standards from the effective date of the statute going forward.
Finish your thought. Question.
Well, the clear legislative intent is to eliminate this idea of you have a Peace Officer's Bill of Rights, but some people can completely be not part of the Peace Officer's Bill of Rights. They were fixing that issue across the state.
So if your client had left employment for any reason in 2021, would Chandler have had any recourse?
If he had left employment in 2021?
2021.
No. You could, at that point, he's subject to the standard protections in Arizona, which is at-will employment. Now, if he had left, or if Chandler had fired him in 2021 because they're discriminating based off of age or race or because they're violating the law or because he's a whistleblower, he's entitled to the statutory protections that existed in 2021. Because at-will employment has been construed by the courts repeatedly to say you still have to follow the law. That's the check if you're going to fire someone.
That's wagon seller.
Yes, that's right? Wagon seller. And then the EPA. But then you also have the EPA, which says even when we're talking about essentially a legislative restriction of wagon seller, you have the actual language saying we are going to put in a provision that if the Constitution or the laws of Arizona provide additional protections to public employees, notwithstanding every other part of that paragraph, you have to actually follow public policy as set by the Constitution and laws of the state of Arizona. So that's where you have this idea of, look, the question is, can someone permanently opt out of a legislative change for something like the Peace Officers Bill of Rights? And my concern, as someone who regularly represents police officers, is can employers say, I'm hiring you right now, the POBR is frozen right now because you signed an appointment letter saying you're only entitled to the rights in 2024, notwithstanding any other legislative change? And I think that that's what Chandler's arguing at the heart, and I think that that's really concerning as a matter of law.
So the inverse of Judge Williams' question, if your client had been terminated in 2021, he would not get the benefit of 281103, which says he can only be terminated for just cause.
That's right? Exactly correct. And in fact, if Chandler wanted to, on September 1st of 2022, before the generally effective date, they could have fired him at that point for any reason or no reason, as long as there wasn't an unlawful reason. And on its face, before the legislative amendments in 2022, that was legal. They could do that. Similarly speaking, before the Civil Rights Act, under at-will employment, I could fire someone for a discriminatory reason. But notwithstanding any type of at-will term, once the legislature puts a restriction in there, they're very clearly trying to say, here's the minimum rights given to peace officers. And they knew what they were doing because they actually exempted some of their own employees. The state exempted at-will employees from agencies of the state. But the actual the purpose of a Peace Officer's Bill of Rights was to make it universal and not allow some type of permanent opt-out. And they were very clear that they wanted to make sure that any agreements that were supplementing or enhancing were not preempted. But just that language of preemption means that you're looking back for something.
Again, I'm concerned they didn't expressly say this is retroactive and applies to pre-existing agreements. And I'm also concerned they didn't do that because they knew they might be walking into a giant contract clause problem.
Well, the issue with the contract clause is that you have a public policy reason for doing this. Policing is a heavily regulated profession in the state of Arizona, so you do have legislative intent to say we're going to standardize this going forward. Now, I think that there would be a huge contract impairment issue if they said it was retroactive, meaning it applied to cases that were currently pending. So if they were trying to get a result different than Kroll, of, hey, we want to make sure that even if you currently have an appeal, we're going to apply this statute to your current appeal that's pending, that would create a contract problem because you would have a vested right. I had the right to fire someone or not follow the POBR at that time, and I didn't have notice, and public policy considerations are far stronger. But Arizona courts have been really clear, if it's not a vested right, which there is no case law saying that a at-will employment term is a vested right, you can very clearly extinguish unvested rights. And even if you have a vested right...
What cases are those that say at-will employment is not a vested right?
Well, I guess it's the inverse of that. There has never been a case that says that at-will employment is a vested right. And then when you have the definitions of vested rights, you have Hall versus A&R Freight saying that a right is expectant when they depend upon the continuing existence of the present condition of things. Well, the present condition changed because at-will employment for someone who's not an agency of the state is gone.
But at the time they signed the agreement, they expected that he would be an at-will employee.
They did.
That was the consideration for the promotion, wasn't it?
Well, that was one of the considerations. At the time I hired an employee, I expect to be able to pay them the minimum wage. Now, if the state says, no, you can't do that anymore, and I say I can't employ that employee at that wage, I can lay them off. If I have a new OSHA regulation saying it's too expensive to have an employee and follow the OSHA regulation, I can lay them off instead of follow the regulation. But everyone's expected to follow the law and the minimum standards, particularly when you have the clear legislative intent of that's what the POBR is supposed to do. And there has never been a case that I can find where a court has allowed employers to just opt out of future legislation. And this at will, you were at will at that point in time, at will is always limited by public policy. And with that, I'd like to reserve.
Thank you, Mr. Cerbalek.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Baker. I'm with the law firm of Green and Baker, and I represent the city of Chandler. I have to say, not that anyone cares, this is my 40th year of practice, and I read all of these cases. I'm old school. I've got them all printed out in hard copy. I have little briefs that I had to do on my own, and I'm struck by the fact that this case can be resolved by well-settled law. Principles that are not debatable. It is not debatable that ARS 122, retroactivity of statutes, says no statute is retroactive unless expressly declared therein. This case can be solved, and Chandler asks the court to do as the Superior Court did and as the District Court did in Blunt, and find that the amended POBR applies prospectively only to new agreements and not backwards to existing agreements.
Ms. Baker, you'd agree that there is case law, though, that says even absent an express retroactive clause from the legislature, there are circumstances where a statute may be applied retroactively if it's procedural and not substantive in nature. You'd agree that there's case law to that effect, correct?
There's three exemptions to the requirement for express language, and as the Blunt Court found and the Superior Court here, none of those exceptions apply. This is not an amendment that's procedural only. It does affect substantive rights, and we'll get to that. It does not constitute applying a new procedure to future events. Simply, none of those things apply. And here's the problem with counsel's hypothetical. And in my view, the problem with his entire agreement is he's ignoring the requirement to focus on how the vested substantive right arose. And in this case, it arose from a contract. And Kroll tells us, but frankly, a long series of cases before Kroll tells us, that a right is vested when it becomes assertable. And you can't look at a case. Now, Kroll involved when does a defense to a claim vest, but that's not what we're here about. We're here about a contract that when it was executed immediately gave Chandler the right to assert its at-will rights. Mr. Veach could be fired at any time for any lawful reason, the agreement says. Chandler was not in any way trying to avoid the lawful requirements, the public policy exception to the at-will employment doctrine. We immediately had the assertable right, and that right was substantive, as was found by the Blunt Court, and it has not been disputed by Mr. Veach. We immediately had the ability to terminate him at will. And so the question is, if you are going to go back, and again, it's important that it was a contract right.
Why doesn't the right vest at the time you actually take the action that you're required to take under the contract?
Because the case law says that the right vests when it is assertable. It doesn't say that the right vests when the right is asserted. It is when it is assertable. And in this case, it was immediately assertable. It was a vested substantive contract right that Chandler had from the date of the agreement forward. And so Arizona law that is not in dispute tells us that if you want to reach back and impact that, if you want to impair an existing right by some new provision, that is by definition a retroactive application. And I would suggest that we've cited many, many cases. Again, it's not new law. But the Landgraf case, the U.S. Supreme Court discussed a long series of statements by different courts, different judges, about what retroactive application is. And Mr. Veach keeps saying that, gee, he's not asking for a retroactive application. And his argument is simply that let's go chronologically. Let's go with here's the amended POBR, here's the date of the termination. That's the way that we look at it. That's not the way that Arizona courts look at it. And or is it the way that the United States Supreme Court looks at it? A statute is being applied retroactively where it takes away or impairs vested rights acquired under existing laws. Now, Mr. Veach acknowledged in his brief the rights may have vested at the time the contract was entered into. And Mr. Veach acknowledged in his brief that the at-will agreement was lawful when made. This fits exactly within this definition. Mr. Veach wants to have the non-retroactive statute reach back and impair a pre-existing contract that has vested substantive rights. And Arizona does not allow that to occur unless you have a statement, an express statement of retroactivity, and there is none in this statute.
Ms. Baker, what about your colleague's argument that there are no cases out there that say at-will employment is a vested right? How do you respond to that?
I would say when anyone says that, I'd be asking them, where's the case where somebody dared to challenge that? Where's that? Because what we're talking about is a right that arises from contract. So we're not looking at, gee, it's in this case, it's an at-will right. It could be any other type of right that is immediately assertable that arises under a contract is vested. So I think that's a clever argument, but it doesn't have the impact that counsel would like it to have because it's a meaningless statement, unless you can show that a court said, gee, this one type of contract right, in contrast to all others, does not immediately vest, but we know it did. Counsel has even acknowledged that right up until the date of the POBR, he claims, we could assert that right. It was immediately assertable.
What if the city entered into a contract with an employee, doesn't have to be a peace officer, and says, wants to pay them minimum wage, but instead of saying minimum wage, it says, for example, $7.50. And then the legislature, by statute, increases the minimum wage. Doesn't the employer, the city, have to comply with that change?
We don't have that here. We have nothing like that here. And what I would suggest is because we have established frameworks to deal with all of these issues. If you had a right that applied to the general public as a whole and was so important to the general public as a whole, as minimum wage, which some of these cases relate to, you know, the hours you can work in a mine, the minimum wage to women and children. When you have a broad right like that, if the legislature wants to take the steps it needs to take and say it's retroactive and here's our broad public purpose and we're not going to worry about the contracts clause because we meet all those tests, there's a way for the legislature to do that. Remember, Arizona law clearly says what the legislature means it will say. Kroll reiterated, but it's said in many cases, the legislature knows how to make a statute retroactive if it wants to make it retroactive. And here it didn't do that. The mere fact that we have these four lines and council wants to speculatively pick out language to say, well, maybe this meant retroactive or maybe this meant retroactive, that's not what the legislature is allowed to do. It doesn't have to say this statute is retroactive, but it has to clearly and expressly indicate an intent to apply it retroactively. And then here, of course, I think you raised a good point. We'd be speculating to say that the legislature didn't say, gosh, we don't want to retroactively apply this to impair a pre-existing vested substantive contract right, because then we have a contracts clause problem. And so for all we know, the legislature, as case law suggests, knows exactly what it's doing. It means what it says, and it says what it means. And here, it didn't say that there was a vested, that it was going to retroactively impair contract rights or apply the statute retroactively at all.
So let's say Commander Veach serves honorably for another 20 years. So we're talking about 2040, and then the city wants to terminate him for misconduct. We then go back and look at an agreement from 2020?
They don't even need to terminate him for misconduct, and there's nothing about a contract that says it can't run for 20 years. Now, given the fact that these are commanders, Chandler's at-will agreements related to commanders, it's very unlikely that anything like that would ever arise. But yes, exactly, unless it were renegotiated for some reason. And here's my suggestion to you, because council says, oh my gosh, you're creating two tiers. Oh gosh, this is a horrible situation. What we have to remember is in 2014, whatever ill there was is an ill that was created by the legislature. The legislature, in its wisdom, said, we are fine with you having non-conforming agreements, agreements that change the terms of the POBR. And then when it went forward to say, gosh, we're not going to allow future agreements to do that, it didn't say, oh, by the way, there's this horrible ill of this subset of employees, subset of law enforcement officers who may have these non-conforming agreements. The elephant in the room at the time, we better go back and void those. It knew how to say that if that's what it meant. It absolutely knew how to say, gosh, this is a big problem we should deal with, and it didn't do that. And my suggestion to you is this amended statute shows a difference in a change in philosophy, a change of mind. The legislature is allowed to do that, but there's absolutely nothing in here that suggests they intended to go so far as to make it retroactive to impair prior vested substantive contract rights. And
I don't know if you know this, but are most officers in Chandler at-will employees, or was it because Commander Veach became a commander?
It was because of the position of commander, which had been designated, and it says in the agreement has been designated by the city as an at-will position.
Right. Most officers would be represented by a union, and there'd be additional protection.
I think they have an option to join the union or not join the union, but Chandler's, it was the commander level. And of course, there's good reasons for a police department to have the Chandler, to have high-level employees at will, and so this is commander and above. So there's nothing inherently wrong with what Chandler did. There was nothing evil or nefarious about what Chandler did. What it did was completely reasonable, and if the legislature had meant to look back retroactively and impair that, it would have. If the legislature
Do you agree the city could not enter into this agreement with Commander Veach now after the 2022 change?
If they had a new agreement, it would have to have the minimum standards set forth in the POBR. And again, to me, this is quite significant. You see, whatever this huge alleged problem was, which I don't think was large at all, the legislature solved it. It took care of it. This statute can be applied exactly as written and can do exactly what it means to do. It, whatever problem it perceived, it took care of it by saying we're no longer going to allow those agreements to occur, and if you don't have the minimum standards in your agreement, it's preempted. And to me, that's instructive language, because it had created the right to do the agreements. And in the amendment, it's not taking that right away. It's saying, oh, you can still do them, but now you have to have the minimum standards in them. So if it was Veach or some other employee that was having a brand new agreement, then that agreement would have to have the minimum standards of the POBR. I don't think you're ever going to reach the Contracts Clause issue. The Superior Court did comment on it. The Blunt Court didn't reach the Contracts Clause issue. I don't think that you need to reach it here, but I'll
sometimes we surprise people.
I'm hoping you don't reach it here. But one, the first issue is the contract substantially impaired? If you were to apply it retroactively despite the lack of any language, well, clearly the at-will contract is completely impaired. I mean, if you read it, it's called at-will employment status. Everything in there is talking about at-will in the terms of at-will. It would be completely obliterated. The second one is... does it serve any broad societal interests? So to me, this is where you can have the most argument, but I really don't think you can argue about it at all. And why is that? Because the U.S. Supreme Court in Spanish tells us that while you're looking for a broad societal interest that is necessary to impair the freedom to contract, you need to have something that impacts the public as a whole, not some narrow class, some narrow subset. That's what Spanish tells us. So look for a broad societal purpose, but it also has to impact, you know, the health and safety of the public, for example. And so examples of where a broad public interest was found, Energy Reserves Group talks about protecting consumers from escalating energy prices. Apartment Association of Los Angeles talks about prohibiting evictions during the COVID pandemic. Well, what are we talking about here? We're talking about whatever the ill was supposedly has been prospectively eliminated. So what's left? We don't have all law enforcement officers. We don't have the public as a whole. We just have law enforcement officers who are a subset of that. We don't have all law enforcement officers. We have just a subset of that, and that would be who's got a non-conforming agreement. So my suggestion to you is there can't be a broad societal interest that the legislature had to allow.
I'm not sure the cases drill down that far on the individual party that's involved in the case.
One of them did, where the statute was written.
Because I mean, you could say, well, they don't have a societal interest in the ongoing employment of a commander in the city of Chandler who entered into an at-will agreement in 2020.
I understand what you're saying. I'm talking about size, impact. So that's why I'm talking about subset, and that's why I'm talking about the subset of people who have the agreement. I'm talking about why broad societal impact, so I understand what you're saying. And I think what Spanish says is it can't be a narrow class. And so there was one case that talked about something that was enacted supposedly to go after one employer. I think it was in Minnesota. But no, I don't say that it has to be that specific, but it has to be important to society as a whole. Now,
whether officers are treated fairly when they enter into employment agreements could be considered as having very broad effects in terms of who it induces or doesn't induce to enter the field. I mean, it could have a much broader effect than just atomizing it, like Judge Catlett's question implied, to, you know, his client.
I suppose that it could if someone is concerned that they would not be treated fairly by their employer, but that's true for any employee. And so that would not be specific to law enforcement. It would be any employee at all. But that does not create a broad societal interest because we're really just talking about...
Well, maybe society has more of an interest in doing that when it comes to public safety.
Well, public safety, again, what are we talking about? We're not talking about hearing procedures. We're talking about what regulates police conduct. those are the standards of conduct of the police agencies, how to arrest, how to protect the public, how, you know, the operational issues. Those may be of broad public concern, but whether you get, whether you're at will or not, whether you agreed to be at will or not, I suggest to you does not fall within the definition of broad societal interest, even though I understand your point that an individual who's applying at a department might care about that. I agree with that.
In a society that has a hard time getting enough good qualified people to apply to this very difficult and dangerous job, that might also be more broadly important as well.
It could be, and it might be relevant here if the legislature had expressed any idea like that, because of course, let's take this hypothetical forward. Let's say they had included retroactive language, which we know they didn't. And then they know, oh gosh, we have this problem that we're impairing prior substantive vested rights. Well, let's state a public purpose. So we shouldn't all be sitting here guessing about what it might be, could be, should be, depending on what hypothetical it is. Then it would have been incumbent on them to say exactly why they're doing what they're doing. Because as I mentioned, in looking at all these cases, this framework isn't new. If the legislature wanted to do what Mr. Veach says he thinks it wanted to do, it could easily have done it, and none of us would be here arguing about it, because there are steps that it could have followed to be making the language clear. It could have clearly expressed, see, the public purpose has to relate to the impairment of the right to contract. So it would need to state a public purpose for why we're going to impair the right to contract. It said nothing. The legislature stayed mute in this circumstance when one would have expected it to say something if it meant anything like what Mr. Veach is asking for. So I would ask the court.
Yes, sorry, you're trying to sit down, but I think they raise a contract clause argument under both the U.S. and the Arizona constitutions.
Yes.
Are the tests the same?
Yes, they are the same, and okay. Each side has cited several cases that say that we apply both state and federal law, and the tests are the same. And the last.
I guess it's you that's relying on both, because your client's the one that would make the contract clause challenge.
Exactly.
Right.
So he cited the same. Right. Only because I had to read all this, I know, but I have 30 seconds left, and I would just say that the final part of the test is voiding existing contracts is not reasonable or necessary, because we know this statute can be applied as intended without making it retroactive, and for all we know, doing so is exactly precisely what the legislature meant.
And that would be consistent with the canon of constitutional avoidance as well.
Yes.
Yes.
My final comment, because I only have a few seconds, there's two arguments that were new in the reply brief that shouldn't be considered. That relates to Montana law and a new argument under ARS 23-1501. We have requested fees merely because these are such well-settled principles, we believe, so we would ask you to uphold the decision of the trial court. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Baker.
Thank you.
Your Honors, there are entire agencies where police officers were appointed with a letter saying that you're at will. So if you follow the logic of what Chandler's saying, these entire agencies have permanently opted out of the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, and the legislature cannot set the minimum standards that they clearly intended on setting. There were some questions about the idea of—
Will the legislature be allowed to make the Peace Officers Bill of Rights operate only prospectively?
Well, would they be allowed to? Yes.
Yes.
They could say that this takes effect for any officers hired after 2025. In theory, they could do that, but they clearly didn't. They said, we want to establish the minimum rights for peace officers.
So the legislature could have done what she thinks it did. It just didn't do it specifically enough.
Absolutely, because they didn't. Well, that would be the exact opposite of what they are clearly stating they want to do, establish minimum rights. They don't want to create something so we have to look and say, were you hired 30 years ago? There were questions that the panel asked about, can you extinguish a right that could have been exercised? Well, of course. El Paso versus Simmons did exactly that. You had a land claim that you could make in Texas that you could potentially get your land back. The legislature said, no, you can't. From this day forward, if you didn't exercise this right previously, you can't do that anymore. And the Supreme Court upheld that in an 8-1 opinion. And then you also have San Carlos Apache Tribe versus Superior Court, where our Supreme Court in 1999 said the legislature may provide, for instance, that a right vested. So even if we decide that an at-will term, if you guys are the first panel to ever do that, you decide that an at-will term is somehow a vested right. Even a right vested before a statute is effective will be affected by the specified event occurring after the statute is effective. The legislature may not change the legal consequence of events completed before the statute's enactment. So even if you have a vested right, in that case it was water, if the legislature says from the effective date forward, as long as there's another triggering event, you can apply a new law, because our laws are not frozen in amber. And then, of course, we have 1.2.11, the rules of construction and definitions, where the rules and definitions set forth in this chapter are going to be observed in the construction of laws of the state unless such construction would be inconsistent with the manifest intent of the legislature, and statutes shall be liberally construed to affect their objects and to promote justice.
Counsel, could you comment on her distinction about assertable versus asserted in the context of vesting? That was kind of central to her refutation of you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You could have done something back in the time. Just like in El Paso, you could have gotten your land back. But the actual question is, that's why it's not a vested right. It's a contingent or expected right, depending on how you want to read Vanderkroll. You could have done something at that point in time. Now, you can't do it going forward, because there isn't a contracts clause analysis problem for non-vested rights. If it's contingent or expectant, this is what Vanderkroll talks about. And then you also have Hall, of course, saying that you used to have the defense of contributory negligence that existed for personal injury cases, but now that's been essentially modified by the legislature. That's okay, because you look at what the actual law is at the time that you're bringing a claim, or in that case, a personal injury lawsuit. So if you have a vested right, something that's complete, you can't change it. This is how you can read this in harmony with the minimum wage laws. If you're changing what someone's wage needed to be going backwards, you have a problem. If you're saying from the effective date of the minimum wage law going forward, that's absolutely a proper legislative use of its authority. And the Supreme Court recognized that too. Because the
let's say we agree with your argument. What ultimately is your client asking for? A hearing under
38-1107? Remand for a hearing under 38-1107.
Yeah.
Because that's what the POBR would allow at that point. If the POBR applies, there was no appeal that was actually capable.
So Chandler doesn't have a process.
Correct.
Before you get to the Superior Court.
We asked, and they said no.
Okay.
Without any questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Cerbalic. Council, thank you both for your written briefs and for your argument today. You've given us much to consider. We'll take the matter under advisement. We're going to recess to allow the next argument to set up. Thank you.